to the skies very high.
Hello and welcome to Talking PPG Radio. My name is Will Jones. The following information is not for training, but personal experiences and reflections on the world of power paragliding as I know. All guests of Talking PPG Radio have formed their own ideas, thoughts, and opinions on the world of power paragliding. They are not necessarily the thoughts or opinions of Talking PPG Radio. You may agree or disagree to what you hear. Talking PPG Radio is here to get conversations, thoughts, ideas about the world of power paragliding. Safety first. I highly recommend a qualified instructor. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, hello. Welcome back, Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. Welcome back. Well, today I sit down and I talk to Sagiv, a soon-to-be PPG pilot out of West Palm Beach, Florida. Sagiv actually emailed me several days ago about a great idea. He had some questions that he really, you know, he thought that would be, that he wanted answered and would be helpful to basically the pilot that's looking, that's still on the fence about getting equipment, instructor, just questions that he had when he was, you know, in the process of looking for information about PPG. And I said, that's a great idea. So he ended up emailing me about 12 questions to look at. And I said, hey, I'm sure there are people out there that are still have questions, and I think this would help them. So we sat down, we talked, and that's what you're about to hear. It's about 12 questions we go over. I answer them to the best of my knowledge. If you don't like that answer, or you have you answer it better, hey, email me back and I'll call you and discuss it with you, or, you know, figure out a way of saying, hey, you know, so and so said this about question number whatever. So that's what you're about to hear. And you experience, guys, this will probably be boring for you because you're way past this. These are some of the questions that actually would help the person that's actually maybe even still looking for his equipment. Now, Sagiv has actually basically narrowed down his instructor and what he wants to buy, but these are the questions that he, I think, would have loved had answered before maybe even he even got to the point that he's at now, where he's basically narrowed everything down. So, but anyway, I'll let you hear him. And like I said, if you have any questions, thoughts, comments, ideas, hey, give me a call, throw me an email, and we'll go from there. Thank you for listening, Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio.
Hey guys, welcome back, Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. If you recall, I always in my podcasts or my episodes, I try to say, if you have any ideas, thoughts, questions, give me a call. And of course, I think I've gotten one person to actually call me or email me and say, hey, why don't you try to do this? Well, I'm checking my email, and I get the second email. Sagiv Lampkin emails me and says, hey, why don't you try to do something where the guy that's on the fence, like he told me that basically he was on the fence and not quite sure and had some questions. And so basically I emailed him back, called him, we talked, and I got him on the line today. So basically what this episode is going to be about, that guy, the new guy that's looking for more information, has questions, on the fence, not sure which way to go, and we're going to talk about it. So how are you doing today, Sagiv?
I'm doing great, Will.
Tell everybody about yourself a little bit before we get going.
Okay, a little bit about myself. Well, you know, I'm 29 years old. I live in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I've always been fascinated by aviation, and I've been looking at ultralights ever since high school. So, you know, about, you know, 10 years or so far. And I went into the Marine Corps for 8 years, and I wasn't really able to follow up on that passion there.
Right.
But civilian again, and why not now? So it's something that I've been interested in very much, and now I can finally do it. So I figured it would be a good idea to maybe do a series of shows, one now, you know, before I purchased any gear,
yeah,
asking my dumb newbie questions.
Listen to
you. Know, a couple months after I've had a few flights, bought gear, had a few flights, we'll do another one, and, you know,
yeah,
just to try to help the newbies who are in my position right now.
Well, that's a great idea, man, and I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that are probably in the same position that you are. A lot of questions, not really, and maybe even afraid to ask the questions, because myself, I was kind of, you know, afraid to ask questions, to tell you the truth. I kind of, if you did like what I've found so far in talking to people, they've probably done research a couple of years or more, and said, you know, like you said, it's time, you know. Me, my situation was, yeah, I did, you know, saw it 10 years ago, been flying for 2 years, but 2 years prior to that, I was probably searching for all kind of information and stuff. So I'm not sure how was your path to where you're at right now.
Right, and I understand what you're saying about, you know, a lot of people being afraid to ask questions. You know, me personally, I'm not afraid to admit that I don't know much about it yet,
mm-hmm.
and I don't care if my questions sound stupid. I'm a firm believer that there's no such thing as a stupid question,
right.
And hopefully, I do believe this, that a lot of us guys that have never done it before, we might not have exactly the same questions, but I bet my questions are very, very similar, or a bunch of our questions are very similar. So I think me asking my questions is really going to help a lot of other people out who have similar questions.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, guys. He ended up sending me some questions, and we're just going to kind of go through them a little bit. And I'm going to try to answer to them the best of my knowledge, and what I can't, maybe the next show we'll try to go back a little bit and say, hey, I finally got an answer to that question, and we'll see what we can do, man. So I tell you what, we'll just get started and let you go ahead and give out your – go ahead and throw them at me. We'll see what we can do.
All right.
Here. Okay.
You got it, man. Okay, one question here.
Okay.
About flight restrictions.
Yeah.
Can I just fly, from point A to point B, or do I need to like look on Google Earth and look at no fly zones to make sure that I'm not getting into any trouble, or do I just need to avoid stuff like airports?
Well, I'll tell you what. As far as on flight restrictions, and both of the questions is yes and yes. You can fly to point A and to point B. That's no problem at all. I suggest you get a sectional chart, no matter where you at, you know, and check and see where the restrictions are, especially when it comes to airports. There's a ring, and you will get into this hopefully with your instructor that you will actually decide to go with, and they will go over 103 flight restrictions. Straight line, yes, you can. As far as avoiding no fly zones, the only way you're really going to know is actually if you get a sectional chart, or you fly with somebody who actually knows already what are the areas you can and cannot fly over through. 103 would actually explain a lot of, you know, like you're not allowed to fly in congested areas, you know. Yeah, so things like that. So your instructor will definitely go over that with you. And if he does not, you need to, you know, ask him, you know, what are the, you know, the flight restriction rules and stuff. So yes and yes to that question, but there are things that you do need to check. And I would first think, you know, sectional chart, ask someone, and just obey by the 103 stuff, like congested areas and stuff, you know, so. So hopefully that answered your question. So.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, go.
Okay, question number two is kind of related to the first question, but it's a little bit different.
Okay.
I've noticed on a bunch of YouTube videos and stuff, there's guys, a lot of the videos are guys at the beach. Guys at the beach here, guys at the beach there.
Yeah.
How do I know if my beach or my area is okay to fly, where federally might be okay, it might not have a 5 mile, you know, no fly zone, mm-hmm. but how do I know if there isn't like a city ordinance? Do I call the city? Do I talk to the lifeguard? Do I call the police? What's the best way to know? Because I don't want to just show up at my local beach
right.
and piss some people off.
Right.
How do I know if it's okay at my beach or my area?
To my knowledge is,
Every city has, like I said, city ordinances, and the best thing to do is to get in touch with, I would say, the police, is because the police usually are the ones that enforce the no-fly beach zones. There are, and then also, there's a group down there, Paraflyers, those guys out of Christmas, Florida. They would also know which beaches, you know, you can actually try to locate the instructors or some of the flyers there. They could actually even tell you more which beaches that you can and cannot fly at. I know there are many, you know, there's a lot of beaches down there that you can, but there's also just as many as that you can't. So, but first off, I would actually just call the city police, and I'm sure they could tell you, hey, is this beach allowed to, you know, to fly at? So, as far as I know, you know, but, and I, like I said, the best thing is probably even see if you can find somebody that actually, they're locally, know, you know, what beaches that are you're able to fly at. So
okay, thank you very much. Yeah. So yeah, the police would be my best bet.
Oh yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
Sorry. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good. Okay, so far very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Next question: would it be okay? Now I'm a little guy. I'm 130 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Would it
okay.
be okay? Would it be okay for me to get a bigger motor now so that I could take people tandem later?
Wow. Okay. I've heard, it's funny because I've heard this discussion about this before. Okay, you're 130 pounds. You could fly a top 80 with easily, but that's not a very good motor to tandem with. So you can, yes, I would say yes, you can get a more powerful motor. The things, the only difference between your size and what I've seen and heard and is it has to do with, and not necessarily, because a lot of guys, they think, well, you know, hey, I know I can handle a big motor on my back. That's not the problem normally. Normally, it's the torque of the motor a lot of times when you get into, you know, your 130, you know, pounds is what you actually deal with, okay?
Right. That was my original question. That was part of it because, you know, being in the Marine Corps, I'm used to humping a 100-pound pack.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
So if this thing weighs 60, 70, I'm like, no big deal. But I wasn't thinking about how it would behave in the air.
Behave in the air, right. Or, and mostly, it's not only the air takeoff, that initial takeoff, you know, bring the wing up, I'm giving it gas, and it a torque. I mean, you'll get a lot of torque. You know, man, yes, you can, but that's one of those things I would tell somebody, find somebody that has a motor, you know, a bigger motor that would tandem, you would be able to tandem with, put it on and see what, you know, how it reacts to you before you actually go and buy that bigger motor. Because at 130 pounds, man, it's like, whoa. You know, I don't want to sit here and say no. I don't want to sit here and say yes, you know. Because it's one of those things you really should, you know, hopefully your instructor maybe, has a bigger motor that you can actually put on your back and see the torque and see if you can actually handle it. You, man, you got, I wish I was about 130 pounds, 150 pounds, because I would, you know, I fly a 781-22. I'm 225. Well, I lost some weight. I'm trying to lose some weight, but 220 something pounds, and you know, it's fine for me because my extra weight, I can handle the torque. But a guy that I fly here with in Louisville, he tried a 781-22, and he weighs 100 and daggone it, what does he weigh? And he had a problem with it because of the torque of the motor. So, yeah. So, I'm not going to say yes. I'm not going to say no. That's something that, you know, if you can get a chance to put one on your back and feel the torque and see if feel if you can handle it is what I would suggest. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I kind of have a follow-up question to that.
Being, okay, go ahead.
You know, being that I'm 130 pounds,
yeah.
If I do decide that it's okay to get a bigger motor, is there a restriction or a recommendation to the size of passenger I take? Like, could I at 130, can I take you at 230 pounds on the tandem?
Oh, yeah.
Or does it not matter?
Yeah, it does. How it works is the weight, the added up weight. For the wing, you get a tandem wing. I can't remember exactly what the weight range is on the wing. You take into account all the weight, the motor and the two passengers is what you take into account. So,
but it doesn't matter that the front guy is way heavier than the back guy.
No, no.
The wing's okay. It doesn't matter.
No, it does not. No, yeah, because what you're doing before you even take off, you're doing a hang test in that situation, okay? You go ahead and try to, which I don't know if you know that you do, before you actually take off, when you get in a simulator with your instructor, he will put you on a tripod-looking thing and hang you there to make sure you are actually sitting correctly in your harness, in your motor. Make sure you're not leaning too far back or too far forward. So in your situation, you know, until you get, you know, many under your belt, you can usually kind of figure out where you need to, because a lot of them have adjustments where you can adjust, you know, for just the wing forward or back, so you are actually flying in the correct position. So, yeah, that really doesn't matter, other than, you know, you get that 300, you know, 200-pound guy, you just got to, like, all right, you know, make sure he does exactly what you say. I'm going to bring the wing up.
You got to run.
Yes, run. Don't stop. Do not sit down, you know. So, yeah, so a lot of things you think about when you get to that point. So, yeah.
So, my next question.
Okay.
How do I find the right paraglider? Is that something where basically I just take my instructor's recommendation? Because I see so many on the internet, you know, DHV1, DHV2, all these different things. How do I pick what's right for me, or basically do I just let my instructor pick for me?
That's probably the best thing to do, because he's going to be working with you and he knows exactly your weight. It goes into your weight size and the motor unit and... Yeah, exactly. Most of the instructors out here, basically, they are selling a certain unit or a certain, they have a deal with whoever's actually distributing the wings, you know, MacPair, Power Atlas, Ozone. There's a ton of wings. So whoever you actually are instructed with, a lot of them will have several different makes that you can pick from. So, that's basically, I think he'll let you decide, you know, on which brand. You, some guys say, I want this brand no matter what, so that's fine. But then he will decide, okay, this is the size that's best for you. Small, medium, large, you know, and it goes by weight. So, yes, I would let your instructor actually help you decide which wing, as far as that you're gonna get.
All right, next question. I see on the internet that usually, you know, the schools or the training is about 3 to 5 days, sometimes 8 days. Mm-hmm. So my question is, and I know everyone's different, case by case, some people learn faster, some people learn slower, but on average, will I be able to solo after that 3 to 5 days of training? Will I be ready to solo?
You basically, you know, I tell you what, you basically answered it. It's up to you. Myself personally, it took me 3 days and I was solo and I had it down. The biggest thing is the wing control, controlling that wing, learning how to bring that wing up, learning how to kite that wing, learning your equipment, you know, all the other things that go into the instructing part of learning how to power paragliding. So there's no time limit. You know, I talked to one guy that he went through 5 days, even went in the air a couple times and still didn't feel good about it. Went back to training for another 5, 6, 7 days and felt better about it. And he, you know, felt a whole lot better. Just, you know, he didn't feel like he had enough training. So there's never too much training. You know, I hate to put a time or a date on it. Yes and no. Just depends on, you know, you, if you're able to pick it up. And it has to do with you said you're military. So a lot of, you know, 30, 40, you know, most of us are in our late 40s, you know, or not late 40s, but late 30s. You're actually getting in it earlier than I've noticed a lot of guys get into it. Physical fitness has a lot to do with it too, man. I mean, if you're not physical fit, that first day is going to kick your butt, because you are basically working that wing, running, jumping, being tugged, dragged, mad as hell because you can't get it right, you know. So very frustrating, but that's the hardest part, is learning how to control that wing and learning your wing and stuff. So
I'll bring a lot of Gatorade.
Oh, man, too. Yes, absolutely. That first day killed me, and I was like, oh, my gosh. But, you know, that's part of it. That's the part. I'll tell you what, that'll make or break some of the guys. I've heard a story where they trained for that one day,
and they were done. You know.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I vow to you now that will not be my fate.
Determination. Exactly. There you go, man.
That I guarantee to you. Unless I break something, I'm going to be in there for the long haul.
Good.
Okay. Can you explain to me really briefly, or break down for me, you know, what happens in training? Is it mostly, like, learning to kite on the ground, or is it mostly motor stuff, or can you just break down for me what really goes on in that 3 to 5 days?
Okay. Will get familiar with your equipment. There will be a ground school, which they go over equipment, the ground screw covers equipment, a wing, lets you, get you familiar with how to hook everything up. You will also do a simulator. Simulator basically is getting in what I told you, the tripod. You sit there, you get your hang test to make sure you're level and flying, you would be flying correctly. You will go over 103 stuff, weather stuff, you know. Any of the USPA certified instructors are using a syllabus that they go by, and basically it takes you from point A to point B to, you know, in the air. Next, you would be kiting. Well, then that would probably be like what we were just talking about, and it could be frustrating at times.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. Sorry to cut you off, but
no.
Just want to know, this syllabus, is it possible to get this on PDF so I can prepare myself before I even show up there?
You know what? I've been looking for it myself. Yes, I've been looking for it myself.
Is that something that should be out there?
I don't know. I think it's one of those things that they give to the USPA instructors, and once you become an instructor, you get it, because it may be one of those things they don't want anybody to have it unless they are a USPA instructor. That's the only thing I can think. I have to, you know what? I'll see if I can't get in touch with Jeff, going and ask him that question, because I'm not really sure. Because I looked too. I even went on USPA.org looking for it, because they talk about it all the time. Like, syllabus, but I never seen it, never saw it, never, you know, I don't know. That's a good question. So I'll try to get in touch with Jeff and ask him that question.
Sounds good. Okay, sorry to cut you off.
That's okay. It's all right. Well, just getting back real quick. Then you're kiting, you know. Most instructors say once you're able to kite that wing for so many minutes, you know, then they start working with you with the motor on your back and kiting and pulling the wing over your head. And all instructors should actually put you on radio before they, you know, on your initial takeoffs and landings. A lot of the instructors, hopefully you'll get, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I've heard as many as, you know, 25, 30 flights in that training time. So, and everything depends on weather, time, things like that. So, and how you progress as a, you know, as a student. So, yeah, should cover you when you get in the air. The first time, after the first time, okay? The first time it's kind of like, whoa, I can't believe it. And then you get up there and you relax and you hear them in your ear and you're thinking of all these things he told you about, you know. You should feel confident that, hey, all right, I think I can do this, you know. The next scariest thing is when you're by yourself and you, that first time, second time. It takes about,
I'm sure,
you know, 20-something flights before you really start thinking, okay, I know this, you know, I can do this. So at least I did. It took me about 20-something flights, it seemed like, before I was like, okay. So.
Okay. I have one more training question, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. At least right now, obviously, that I've never flown. I've never even been up in a tandem.
Yeah.
So at least my standpoint now is that I'm not interested in any way, shape, or form in trikes. I just want a foot launch.
Okay.
My question is, in training, do they train you in foot launch and trike usually, or is it only if you plan to do trike do you train on trike?
Most
train both regardless.
Most of the instructors will only train you one at a time. If you're planning to just do foot launch, you'll just do foot launch, you know. And if you're planning to do just triking, they'll just do triking. As far as if they would actually combine both, I'm sure they would. But most guys, they're either foot launching or they're triking. Myself, I learned foot launch and then also trike. So, but most of the time it's just a foot launch. You know, if that's what you're going for, that's all they'll train you for. Unless you request, hey, I'd love to, you know, of course, you're going to buy a trike too. I'd love to go ahead and buy a trike and be trained on it too. They will do that. But most of it's just, okay, you're going to foot launch, we're going to do foot launch only. Floop, that's it.
I see. And, you know, I lied. There is actually one more question. During this training, is it a class of more than one person, or is it just you and an instructor, or is it like 5 guys or 10 guys all learning at the same time?
The most I've heard by anybody has been about 3 guys. And it just depends on what the instructor actually has lined up. I've seen it 101, like I said, 2 and 3 before. I've heard there was two of us when I was learning. So a lot of times I think the instructors try to get that, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 guys. I've never heard anything over that, but it just depends on your schedule and his schedule and how you you guys work it out. So it could be yes. Could just be you know, solo, individual, all the, you know, right there in your face, telling you, you know, which is great, you know, one-on-one stuff. So
I think that would be vastly preferable.
Oh, you know, yeah, it would be great, yeah, because, you know, time is right there, you know, with you, you know, and any question, blam, right there.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What is the approximate range of a powered paraglider on one tank of gas? I've been looking at all these videos, and on one video on YouTube, I saw it was a Del Shanzi video.
Yeah.
And in the comments, he said on his flat top, he has a range of 280 nautical miles on one tank. And I talked to some other guys, and they said we can go about 100 miles. Now, from 100 miles to 280 miles, it's a big disparity. So what is, you know, how far can you go on your on one tank of gas if you don't stop?
Okay. All right. Most of the tank's about 2.5 gallons, okay? Now, some of these motors, I think Dale can actually put 2 tanks on his, okay? Now, what you have to take in consideration, wing, high performance, aspect ratio, all that stuff, which you'll, you know, not to try to throw anything over, you know, above you there, but it's all aerodynamics, weight, the side, like me, okay? I have a 1722. I get 2 hours out of it because of my weight, my wing, and that's it. That's probably about 15 miles out, 15 miles back in, depending on the wind. There's so many, you know, variables that you have to take into consideration when it comes to doing what I love to do, cross countries, okay? Now, 2 hours, and I say 2 hours because I did a cross-country at the Indy Air Hogs fly-in this year. We went 15 miles out. Was it 15 miles into the wind? Was doing probably about averaging about 11 or 12 knots. And normally, you turn and you're like 30, 40 knots coming back, right? No, we was into the wind both ways. So it took. I had exactly 2 hours worth of fuel, and when I landed, it was just on. You couldn't even see if I had anything in there. So, you know, it may, yeah, the person, you may read that, it'll get 280 nautical miles. You know, whoo. Yeah, that's, you know, okay, if he can, man, that's great. You know, wow. That's amazing.
More believable, though, the figure of 100 miles on the, on
oh,
a,
you
on
know, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, well, see, it's funny because if you go to YouTube too, I actually saw Carlos down there in Florida, he did an 80-mile round trip, okay? But he had a bigger...
I think that's going to be my instructor.
You think so? Yeah. He had an 80-mile round trip, okay? Now, on the flat top, he actually has the Simonini M2 Evo 30-something horsepower, okay? Where I think Carlos is flying a Snap 100 or a Rossi, I don't know, Vivarossi, I don't know. So you we're talking about gas burn too. You're going to burn more on that flat top than you would with that, you know, top 80 or a. So there's a lot of things you have to take in consideration. Even wings, you know, wind. So if he says it, okay, wow, show me. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's not true, but it's possible. I guess, you know, that's, you know, downwind. Okay, you know, 2 tanks. Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, but there's so many things you have to take in account for when you're doing a cross country like that. So 280, well,
okay.
That's amazing. Let me bow down to that. You know, wow. So.
Well, I also have a fuel question for
okay.
you now.
Okay. All right.
When I was on the internet perusing, you know, the different brands, I saw on the Fresh Breeze ones. I thought it was that they said don't put don't put MoGas in there. Put AvGas yes. only in these. So I was wondering, I know most of these motors, they're different motors, but they're all, you know, two-stroke motors.
Yeah.
Is there a is it better to use aviation fuel, or is it better to use, you know, pump fuel with the two-stroke oil mixture?
Okay. All right. I'll give you, that's how you mentioned the Fresh Breeze. The deal with the Fresh Breeze things is they have the inverted motor, okay? And what was happening, they found is that the MoGas was not lubricating, or no, I'm sorry, the ethanol that they've been putting in the gas here lately is actually washing out the lubricant and is breaking and messing stuff up, okay? That's why they say use AvGas. AvGas has lead in it. It cools. It's the way to go as far as Fresh Breeze. If you're flying a Fresh Breeze inverted motor, you should be flying AvGas. And I know if you're flying MoGas now, it's just a matter of time before you're like, okay, what happened? My motor just locked up. So that's why you've read that about the Fresh Breeze motors. And I would say any of the inverted motors, that's the best thing to do is use AvGas. Now, I know a lot of guys are using the regular, you know, AvGas in top 80s, using, you know, and their Vivarossis, and, you know, I myself personally use AvGas, and I used MoGas before. There is a difference. It's just, man, it's hard to explain. Now
you can feel the difference as it runs. You mean?
Oh man, that
like
was great. Yes.
Running on your back.
Oh, yes, it was. You know,
wow.
And I mean, it's not dramatic, but once you get that motor in your back and you start, you know, you just hear things that are not right, feel things that are not right, right? You'll feel a difference in the way it runs, you know. And I put that, I ran MoGas in it. It's funny because it had AvGas. I went down for training, and there was no AvGas available, and I put the high-octane stuff in, and yeah, he ran all right, okay? But, man, I went back to that, and it was like I could tell the difference when I went back to it. And it's all about cooling as far as AvGas and lubrication. AvGas, like I said, has the lead in it to help lubricate everything. So, you know, there are a lot of guys that are running MoGas, don't get me wrong. You know, upright motors, you know, it's just, I guess they have no problem at all, you know.
Right.
I know, you know.
You think it would be better, though, as far as, like, the longevity of the engine?
I think so,
better?
Yes.
You know, I want to treat it right so it treats
yes.
me right.
I will say yes.
I want to treat it like my baby.
Right. Oh, so I tell everybody, I said, man, your motor's so clean. Well, I hope I don't ever have to buy another one of these, you know? So,
it's expensive.
You know, this might be the last time buy one, that's it, you know, hey. So I'm going to clean it and make sure it's right. But to me, yes, I will say yes. I strongly recommend AvGas, you know? It limits, you'll hear some of these guys that'll go cross countries and they say, oh, no, I could just land here and get some MoGas and put in, right? But, you know, most of us that are doing cross countries are just basically in and back out, you know, so. But I highly recommend AvGas, without a doubt. Especially you guys that fly on Fresh Breeze, you know, 122s, you better be using AvGas. So you'll be crying later, bearings are going out and stuff like that. But, anyway, yes, AvGas.
Okay, I have a glider question.
Okay.
I've been hearing a lot of different terms about gliders, and I'm not sure I understand them. What is the difference between a regular glider, a semi-reflex, and a reflex?
Oh,
what do these terms mean?
You know, it's funny because that's the biggest thing is these wings, okay? There are so many different wings, reflex, semi-reflex, and just your one, twos, and two. You know. Okay, reflex. Basically, reflex is it's supposed to help you or not to collapse as bad, okay? Which we all know all these wings will collapse. Basically, what they do is they weigh the A's and the B's, which basically, you know, the way they have it built. Man, if I can explain this, it's funny because I know, but being able to explain
line,
it to you.
Right?
That's the lines, A's and B's, yes. A's and
B's,
the front,
okay.
Yeah, the front two lines, yes, A, B, C, D. And basically, the weight is pushed forward, so that it holds the pressure a lot more, okay? So what happens if you happen to get a collapse, the wing actually inflates back to the part that actually is just kind of, it's weird because they say it kind of, it's like nothing there, you can really tell, but it's supposed to be harder to collapse is basically what it is. A lot of guys are on the beach, and they use them as cross countries. It has a lot to do with the risers. When you take and, you know, pull the risers all the way out, you get into full reflex is what they call. Semi-reflex is just basically half of that, is the way I look at it. I mean, it's not a full reflex wing, but it does give you what they call a little more safety feeling as far as the extra pressure that's put on the front, the leading, you know, the lines, the front edge. And I hope I'm explaining this right, because from what that's, you know, I've read something about it, but it's one of those things where it's like, okay, wow, all right, that's what it's supposed to be. But we all know, guys, and a lot of guys say, don't buy a reflex wing because you're going to fly in rough air. It's supposed to help you in rough air, but never buy a reflex wing because you think you're going to be able to go up and fly in rough air, you know. So
what I'm getting from this is that reflex is safer.
Yes, that's what they say. Yes. Yeah.
Do you have to be, can you be a beginner and fly reflex, or do you need to fly standard and then go reflex?
See, that's what's so,
like, my first wing?
You know what? It's so funny. It's so funny. Okay. Let's talk about that. They, over in Europe, you know what, a lot of the beginner guys over there use reflex, they buy reflex wings, you know. I mean, but over here in the States, we all want you to buy a beginner wing, DHV 1-2, you know. They want you to buy something like that and then go up to a reflex wing, you know, because they consider a reflex wing for an expert because it's harder to inflate. Steering is a whole lot different. A lot of these reflex wings, you got wingtip steering, which is to help you turn. You know, so there's a lot more things you have to deal with a reflex wing. That's why most instructors, or all the instructors over here, will say, no, I want you to have a beginner wing, you know, and they will direct.
They will work your way up to it.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely do that. I wouldn't go out here and purchase a reflex wing if you're a new guy, you know. I would wait. I would absolutely wait. And a lot of guys say it comes down to, are you going to be a... A lot of times it comes down to, what do you plan? How do you plan to fly? Do you plan to fly the beaches all the time? Do you plan to be one of those guys that like to hang out around the LZ and just play? Or are you one of those guys that like to do cross countries? Because they say the reflex wings are the reflex and semi-reflex wings are excellent cross country wings. Then you get into more of a high performance wing, which is not a reflex, but you still get the same speed and the same glide rate, or a better glide ratio. The things about the reflex wings too are you have to take in your own power more, because you know you don't have as much lift with these wings, because they try to get it's one of those things where you're on power more to stay in the air more to get that speed that you get out of a reflex wing. So
okay. Now, yeah. Do you fly a reflex?
No, I do not. I fly DHV 1-2 is what I fly. So, and if you ask me about the 1-2 and 2s and all that, I say we'll have to call a wing person. So, you know, I fly beginner wing is what I fly. You know, I'll tell you what. I started out, I got a Power Atlas, which is a very beginner wing. It's a 1998 wing. A lot of guys still fly it. But I also have a Silex, which was my second wing, which is the next level up, which a lot of guys used to fly several years ago. And you can tell there's a big difference. My beginner wing, which is my Power Atlas wing, man, it's a boat. It's a, you know, you feel safe under this wing. You know, you go to crank on it, and it's like, okay, crank a little more to get it to turn. Okay, but on my Silex, shoot, you touch those brakes, you're gonna spin, you're on a dime, and it's like, you know, going from a, you know, slow motion to like, you know, a sports car, you know, it's sweet,
like,
yeah.
From a Ford LTD to a Ferrari.
Yeah, okay, all right, we can do that. Yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, and that's all wing design, and the wing designs. It's just, man, you can ask a ton of questions, and hopefully. I'll get somebody on here so I can talk more about wings and stuff, you know. So I know a little bit, and like I said, I've only been in it 2 years. I don't know a lot about them, but it's like there's so much to be learned about the wings. So,
Okay, well, I have a maintenance question for you. Okay. I read a lot of buzz on the internet, and, you know, these two strokes are not reliable, they suck, and I've heard jokes like, you know, we're not pilots, we're mechanics, we just happen to fly our gear. Now, this is my thing. I'm not a mechanic. I can't even change my oil on my car. Am I going to be okay in this sport?
Okay. You'll work on it, man. You will work on your motor sooner or later. Two strokes. They're just basically beating themselves apart. It may even be frustrating, but all two strokes are basically about the same. They are the same. Reed valves, you know. You will be doing maintenance work on it. If you're afraid, guys out there, if you're even afraid that you can't do it you are going to do it sooner or later. You're going to have to do something maintenance wise. And the cool thing about it is too, most of your instructors, people that, you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people down there that you'll be flying with. They probably even know about the motor that you decide to pick. And there'll be somebody down there to guide you. Otherwise, you know, they'll know somebody that knows about the motor that you're going to get. So, yes, you will be doing some maintenance stuff on it, even if it's to change the spark plug. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Plan on
good.
It.
Sounds.
Yeah. Can't get away from it, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I don't really want to get away from it. It's just that I don't have any experience whatsoever in mechanics. So I just, you know, are there people that service these? Are there shops that service these? Or is it just basically the instructors know how to work on them?
Combination of both, actually. And most of the time, when it comes to working on them, if you're not able to do it yourself, you get in touch with your instructor and ask him if he could direct you to somebody that actually knows how to work on them. And there are a lot of guys out there that do know how to work on them, you know, and have worked on them, you know, with no problem at all. I got a friend out west there. He had motor problems, and he was like, "You never, you know, I don't have any tools." Next thing you know,
exactly.
Next thing you know, he's telling me, "Yeah, man, I took the head off and I had to take it here. The guy pressed the thing out here for me, and I had to, you know." I'm like, "Oh, it's something that you can learn. These motors are not very complicated, you know, not very complicated at all. So it's easy. So don't let that scare you. Whatever you do, never let that hit, because it's no big deal. And I tell you, I went to school to be a mechanic. Before I went to school to be a mechanic, if you're like me, like you said, you raise the hood and you're like, okay. But now I raise the hood and I go,
you can tell me there's a flux capacitor.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, sure, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Yes, you will be a mechanic.
Okay, I have a weather question also.
Okay.
Obviously, if it's like a hurricane out there, you shouldn't fly. But does it have to be, you know, picture perfect weather to fly? Or what kind of weather is okay to fly in? You know, like a light, you know, light breeze, or the rains off the land? Or
as a beginner, a lot of your instructors will say don't go anything over, you know, 6 to 7 miles per hour, you know, wind-wise, because you are still, even after they've, you know, signed you off, excuse me, even after they've signed you off, a lot of them still say, hey, don't go over anything over 6 to 7, you know, miles per hour. As far as weather, you always want to check weather. There are many websites out there that will give you what's going on in your area. You know, and I'll have to make a list of all the weather sites and stuff. Like, personally, I go to Underground Weather. What I'm always looking for is winds. I want to know what the winds are doing, and also looking at the radar to see if there's something that's coming in, you know, on down that would actually affect me. So as far as rain, no, you're never in rain. You know, flying off the beach, a lot of things you have to think about. Onshore winds, you always, you know, definitely want onshore winds, not offshore. Blow you out into, you know, the blue yonder there. So there's a lot of things you take into consideration when it comes to weather, and your instructor should go over with you about weather. And hopefully he will also give you great, you know, information as far as places to go to check weather. I listened to one, gosh, Weather Brief, you can call those guys. They will give you the weather. There's so much information out there on the internet as far as weather. You should never have a problem as far as, you should never have that problem. You should always know when the weather's good for you to fly, you know.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That'll be easy. There's lots of resources out there for me to check.
Yeah, so like I said, your instructor will go over you with, should. That's one of the things he should cover with you. Make sure he does cover it with you, you know. You ask that question. If he don't, ask the question.
Well, I've been reading on the internet about these, I guess you go to these when you're in more experienced classes, but they're called like maneuvers clinics, or they're calling it an SIP course. I'm not sure what that stands for, but it looks to me like, you know, they go there and they induce these collapses just so they know how to get out of them and all that. Can you tell me a little bit, what does SIV even stand for? What is an SIV course?
I'll tell you what, it's actually a French simulated deincident something, blah, 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 okay? In English, is basically SIV, okay? And it's like you said, it's simulating situations in flight, okay? You're learning how to deal with wing collapses, okay? And that's basically all it is. A lot of the SIV courses, they'll have asymmetrical collapses, dramatic collapses, and that's what what they're trying to teach you is how to react if you got in a situation with your, where you would get a full stall or spin, what you should do, what you need to do to recover from that situation. And that's all SIV courses are. They basically are helping you to learn that wing in situations that, in bad situations, you know, collapses and things like that. And that's basically what SIV course is. So,
How experienced do you need to be before you go to one of these? Do you have to have like 50 flights or 100 flights before you even think about going to SIV course?
That's what I've heard.
More of a beginner?
That's what I heard. But I tell you, I've heard it's best to have, like you said, 50, 60, 70 hours under you and go ahead and take an SIV course. Because a lot of times what, and listening to some of these guys talk, a person gets really brave after an SIV course thinking, hey, I could do more just because I went to this SIV course. And that's not what SIV course is for. It's there to teach you how to deal with situations when it comes to with your wings, you know. So I would suggest, yes, a lot more, you know, 50-plus flights before you think about enrolling in an SIV course. But there's some guys that actually probably would say, no, you should go ahead and enroll into one, you know, immediately. But to me, you don't really get feeling comfortable just by flying around the sky until after 25 plus flight. So I wouldn't even think about one until after that, you know. So
inducing collapses doesn't sound so good.
Exactly. I'm still thinking, you know what, I've been doing how many hours I got. Some about collapsing, but you get the instructors and the beach blast, Chris Santa Croce was there, and he did an SIV course and actually got a chance to watch him and listen to him do one, and it's like, wow, okay. And hopefully that he's making you, and he'll make you feel comfortable. He's, you know, world class, and he knows exactly what's going to happen. Exactly. And it amazes me that, okay, wow, it did it. Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, you know. So, yes, wait until you have more time under your belt before you think about enrolling in an SIV course. So,
sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. But, well, I have one last question for today.
Okay, bring it on.
Flying a reserve, A, do you fly a reserve? And B, is it recommended to fly with a reserve only if you, you know, regularly fly, you know, above a certain altitude? Or should everybody fly a reserve just to be safe?
I fly reserve, yes. Okay. First 25 flights, I did not fly reserve. For some reason, I feel better with the reserve. As far as not afraid of heights or anything like that, you know. I look at it as, well, it's cheap, one more chance. Okay. As far as most of the incidents that we have in PPG, which you probably know, this is starting up or below 200 feet, okay, running into telephone, you know, lines, barbed wire, starting up, the motor getting away from you, things like that. Most of our accidents are like that because we take in consideration the weather. So a lot of the chances of you actually having a collapse. Don't forget about rotor and all these things. Your instructor will go rotor. Hopefully, I'm sure you got the PPG Bible, you know, that Jeff put out. A lot of great information there, guys. If you don't have it, make sure you get it. I'm sure your instructor probably will tell you to get it because there's a lot of information there that, man, he goes over a lot of stuff. But I fly one. I've been seeing a lot more guys that I actually fly with. They're actually flying with a reserve, and I look at it as, you know what, I got one more chance. So, yes, I do fly with one. A lot of guys don't, you know. They just, I feel safer, you know. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's another layer of security.
Yeah, and if you got family and stuff, you know, hey, baby, I'll fly reserve if you let me go fly, you know.
bargaining chip, yeah.
Yeah, you know. So I was, you know, guys. It's like I said, it's a cheap one more chance, you know. I suggest getting a reserve, all you guys. Especially, I found it's funny. I say that, especially for the Midwest, the guys that fly more inland, you know. You never really see a lot of guys that fly the beach all the time. They don't have one. So, and I have to say, because at the beach blast this past year, I didn't fly my reserve for some reason. I felt like, wow, maybe it's because, well, if I go in the water, I'll feel better. Wait a minute. We're talking about over water now. Hold on. You know, so reserve not necessarily going to help me because I'm going to drown, you know, so, but But I think it had to do with, like, at the beach bus for me, constant, nice flow of air. The chance of it getting stupid, you know. Oh, okay, I feel pretty safe. But when I fly inland all the time, I always have one. Even if I foot launch or either trike, I got a reserve. So, for me personally, yes, I suggest getting one.
I think that about does it, at least for this segment of questions. You've been very, very helpful, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, man. Like I said, hopefully everybody out there that's listening, especially you new guys on the fence, thinking about getting into it, we were able to answer some of the questions that you might have. And if you have more, email me. And we'll see if we can't get some more questions going here. And I guess your next thing is you said you have an instructor that you're thinking about going with, right? Which I highly recommend, an instructor. Okay. And have you decided on motors? I know you was thinking tandem later on. Any ideas about
I am kicking around a couple ideas, but obviously, being a newbie that doesn't know anything, if my instructor says, no, that's a terrible idea, I will take that under advice. I think from everything the research I've done on my own, being a newbie, I think the Fly Compress with a back level motor will be the one for me.
One for you. Okay. Yeah.
Not too big, yet not the smallest. I think it'll be good. And we'll see if my instructor thinks that's a good system.
Okay. Yeah, 130. And if you are able to handle that, it'll be a great tandem motor for you, too. So, wow. Okay. Well, excellent. Okay. Well, all right, man. Shoot. Daggone. That was good. That was good stuff. So, guys, Will Jones, talking PPG Radio. Gabe, thanks for coming on, man. And I guess we will talk again and see how far along you have progressed in your quest to be a fellow PPG-er. And if you think up any more questions or anything, man, we'll sit down and talk some more.
Absolutely. I think right after I'm done with training, I'll give you a call. Right after I get my gear, I've gone through the training.
Okay.
You know, I'm a fresh, quote-unquote, PPG pilot.
There you go.
I'll let you know my thoughts are right after training.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'd love to ask you some questions about training and what you thought and stuff. That'd be great, man. Absolutely great. Well, thanks a lot. And, good luck in your decisions is all I got to say.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. There you go. I'd like to thank Sagiv.
great questions. Great idea. Absolutely great idea. I can remember myself, if not all those questions went through my mind at one time or another. I'm sure there are a lot more people out there, a lot more experienced than me that probably could have answered those questions a lot better than me. But I'll tell you what, answered the best I could, and hopefully they were able to help him, help you, help the new person. If you're experienced and still listening right now, thank you. You are dedicated to the show, and I greatly appreciate it. Love that support. So, and if you disagree with any of the answers I gave, or can explain them better, hey, if you're willing to come on and talk about it, hey, drop me a line and we'll talk about it. I'm not trying to give anybody any misinformation, but I'm trying to give them information about, to help. And this is what this is about. This is what Talking PPG Radio is about, just to get more information out there for the experienced, intermediate, whatever type of pilot you are. Don't forget to check talkingppgradio.com every once in a while. I put a couple new things on there, and don't forget, the website is a work in progress. It's a lot of stuff I want to put on there. It's just a matter of finding time to do it. So thank you again, Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. We'll talk to you soon. Oh, gosh, I got 3 great shows on the shelf that are just unbelievable. So, thanks. Bye.